Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday, our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. We're about personalized style that fits your life. Made for real life moments. Maurice's.
We work hard at being healthier.
One, two.
And what we really need is better quality sleep. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed intelligently senses your movements and automatically adjusts your comfort and support on both sides. This is not a bed. It's proven quality sleep. It's the biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Save 50% on the new Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed. Plus special financing only for a limited time. To find your local Sleep Number store, go to sleepnumber.com. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
All right, well, welcome to the After Hours show. I have some special guests on tonight that I actually have been looking forward to talking to on the confessionals for a while. Just never really thought it would come underneath these circumstances. I have Wes Germer and his brother Woody on tonight. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Doing good, Tony. It's been a while since we've talked. It's good to hear your voice again.
Oh, thank you. Woody, I hope you have the fruit snacks in hand. You're good tonight.
you've been listening, obviously. That's
yes. Yeah. I actually binge watched the Renegades podcast today. So,
oh, yeah. Nice.
So we're here on the After Hours show, and we're talking about the episode that we just released today, I Killed Bigfoot. And both you guys had the opportunity to listen to this show before we released it. And, you know, just I guess we'll start off with just some general thoughts on what you guys heard. Woody, let's start with you.
Yeah, you know, I was really involved in the interview that you did. I thought it was really honest. You know, it was kind of I believe his name was Brian, I believe it was his name. He was super honest, kind of has that country boy vibe. And is not afraid to pretty much just tell you how it is. And he said a lot of things that, to me, make sense based on a hunter's perspective of what actually happens out in the woods. And I'm going to tell you this, Tony. I think his story is pretty legit. I really do. There was a lot of things that he said off the fly that you can't make up. And I was pretty impressed. I was very impressed. There was a lot of things that the questions that you had asked him about the Sasquatches versus the red ones, and he was pretty much he had a really good explanation on how the black ones were somewhat friendly. You saw their backside as they're trying to back out of the forest and whatnot. And how much he actually hated the red ones. So, he was definitely very involved. It was great. It was a great interview. Probably one of the better ones I've ever heard.
Yeah, I thought it was fun to talk to him and stuff. And I just, for me personally, I know I can tend to be a gullible person, but when I walked away from this interview, I really enjoyed talking to the guy. And I walked away feeling like this guy legitimately did this. And I knew right there that this show was going to be something that, was going to be a touchy subject. Wes, what did you think about the show?
Well, first of all, I thought you did a great job with the interview. It's hard to, because you got to be about three or four steps ahead to ask the right question. And then in the same breath, you got to be listening to what someone's saying. And so you got to do a really good talent for that, Tony. I thought the guy was entertaining. I thought he was like the most entertaining guest I've ever, he's, I don't give a goddamn, I've blown his head off.
I blew his damn head off.
and he was very entertaining to listen to. I mean, it's the type of guy you'd want to sit across the table from, drink a beer and I'm still laughing about some of this stuff. Bob Garrett told me the same thing. And I, about the red ones versus the black ones. And I never really knew. There was never any real explanation. You wouldn't think a red one would be more And it's just a different color of the same animal. But I've heard other people say that, that the auburn color, the reddish auburn, is more aggressive.
I heard that too before, and so that kind of caught my ear. And there's just a lot of little details that I picked up, and I've listened to the interview a lot now. I mean, I've listened to it every day this week and just trying to just really grasp what he was talking about. And there's just so many minor little details as I'm driving my truck that I pick up and I wish I could write down so I could remember. But it's just, he started talking about things during this interview that if you're not into the Bigfoot thing, you shouldn't know unless you actually have seen these things. One of the things that he was talking about was the power line cutouts and how he feels they kind of like follow those cutouts. And I just found that interesting because he had no idea that that's a common thought amongst the Bigfoot people. But as far as him actually shooting this thing, now, one of the things that I saw online when I posted the promo video, some people were commenting 12 gauge with a question mark, like really a 12 gauge. I'm not a hunter. Woody, you said you're a hunter. Wes, I know you've mentioned about hunting. I've never been hunting before, so I don't know what takes down what. So you guys tell me, you know, with his ammo and how he was talking about the details of hunting, how that could relate to the possibility of taking one of these things down.
With the 12-gauge shotgun, pretty much anything within close range is dead, especially if you're using a heavy turkey load, anything, especially, and he said he was using a 3.5-inch mag. So anything within a close distance is, it's not going to survive. And so he was spot on with that. And he even mentioned later in the interview, Tony, when you were talking to him, I think he said he was like 150 yards, 200 yards away from him another time, and he put a couple in the air, and they turned around when they went the other way. And yeah, of course, a 12-gauge shotgun is not meant, especially with a turkey load in it, is not meant to go that far. It's more of a noisemaker. So he was pretty much spot on with everything he said as far as his hunting skills, the way that he was tracking them in the forest. And he even, you know, he was spot on about when he gets nervous and he started backing his way out. I mean, he had the most realistic hunter experience if you were put in that position. And I really think he was spot on everything. I hate to, you know, there's nothing that I can really pull out of this interview and say that he was full of crap. I can't, you know. And he gets further, you know. And there was a time when he started talking about the the black SUVs pulling up and the game warden and all this. And then you came back to that later in the show. And I know I'm kind of jumping ahead, but you came back to that and you asked him further questions. And he didn't have time to sit and think about that. And he immediately answered your questions based on a hunter perspective. And I was really impressed. I think it's a real deal.
Yeah, Wes, as far as those agents go, now, you've talked to people who say that they've seen these agents come on to the scene after something has happened, whether it's, most of the time it's a sighting. And you heard him describe these agents come up on him. Wes, when you heard that, what did you think? Was there anything that stuck out to you as far as things that you've heard before, similarities or differences?
Yeah, I think it sounds about spot on. I think he's spot on with what I've heard when they show up. And so, yeah, I mean, everything he said was I've heard before in different situations, whether, you know, what happened down in Texas and that even down in Texas, I've heard it beyond that. Going back to what Woody was saying, you know, he was only, what, 15 yards away when he pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
I could see that taking a face off. I mean, you're going to do some damage.
With the 12-gauge?
Yeah.
When he says he busted him, he really busted him.
Yeah.
At 15, 20 yards.
Yeah.
Nothing surviving. I'm sorry.
No, because it doesn't have time to kind of spread out at that point. So I could see him blowing half the face off that thing. I wanted to ask you, Tony, who called the game warden?
That I don't know. I don't know. And I don't think he knows either. He said that the timeline is this. He kills it. He backs out. He gets his friends, shows them the body. The body was moved about 300 feet away. They leave. I think he had BFRO come out the next day. they wouldn't go in to see the body. He said it was there, but they wouldn't go look at it. They left, and then the next day, the agents show up. And so I didn't really think about this during the interview, because like you guys said earlier, I mean, you're already trying to think two steps ahead during an interview. And so you're listening to the person, but also trying to write down your questions and things like that. But to me, after listening to the show several times, I wonder if he was hinting that he feels that the BFRO called. Well, now, I don't want to suggest that, you know, as a definite. I don't want people thinking that that's what I'm saying. But because he did say during the interview that he doesn't know who took the body. He said my friends could have taken it. The BFRO could have taken it. And then kind of in the same kind of breath, he suggested that somebody called.
You know, the guys at the Siege of Hanabi, or Honabi, Honabi, however you pronounce it. they kind of have the same story. They had called the BFRO. Everyone knows the story. And the BFRO came out, and it was after they had shot one. Or actually, I think they came out during the time that they shot one. And then shortly after that, the game warden sitting on these people's property, on these brothers' property. I think he even went beyond that. He used to see blacked out SUVs sitting on his property. And so, yeah, I mean, I hate to say the BFRO called, but that just seems weird that all of a sudden the game warden shows up, you know. And it's interesting, too, what the game warden had to say to him. It really wasn't, I don't think he spoke to a game warden between you and I, but it was interesting what the guy said. You know, it's almost he acknowledged the whole thing. Don't do it again.
Yeah, and I mean, I did kind of ask him about that because he said that they told him that you can't kill these things because they're endangered species. Like that's what he said they told him, that they're endangered species and you will go to federal prison for killing one of these things. And I asked him, I said, well, how can they kill or how can they put you in jail for killing something that's not supposed to exist? And that's one thing that I've brought up before in something, probably one of my videos, that, you know, the whole idea that I feel is, you know, if you killed one, I don't understand why they would be upset, because they're not supposed to exist anyways. If they're not coming out and admitting that they're in existence, then how can they ever have any grounds to come at you with killing one? It would be them admitting that they knew they were there. And so I kind of asked him about that and stuff. And he just said that, I guess from what I gathered, it seemed like he was saying internally that they're endangered species. Inside the house, everybody admits to each other, yes, they're there, they're endangered, there's not a lot of them or whatever. But externally to the world, they say, nope, not there. And, you know, there's so many different reasons why that could be, you know, like just for the idea, if they were endangered and they don't want people going around killing them off for poaching reasons, I don't know. But I did find that interesting. And with those agents popping up on the property, and just the way he described it and stuff, I mean, and Woody, you were right. I mean, when I came back and stuff, he didn't hesitate. He rattled off these details, and he also, see, I don't know if I'm not a detective or anything, but when I listen to somebody talking, like, he corrected himself a couple times throughout this interview. You know, when I asked him how many people showed up, he initially said three, and then he said, nope, I take that back, four. And so things like that, for me personally, I'm listening to him, like, it kind of lends authenticity, because he has the details in his mind, and he corrects himself because he knew he was wrong. Does that make sense?
No, that makes absolute sense. And I actually thought the same thing, too, because when you were talking to him, he's like, okay, three vehicles and there was four vehicles or blacked out SUVs. And so he did correct himself in a good manner. And so let me back up a little bit. So, Tony, I'm going to go against what you're saying a little bit. I think about what you said a little bit earlier. I think if he actually thought that the BFRO had, let's say, turned him in, or however you want to say it, or turned in the Bigfoot, and he actually thought that, this is the type of guy that would step up to the plate and say, hey, you know, they did that. I think that I feel like that they did that. And I know where you guys are coming from, because I got the same type of vibe, and I was just making my own my mental note thinking, okay, well, so was a BFRO. But you know what? This is the type of guy that would say, hey, these guys busted me. Or these guys, not busted would be the wrong word. These guys are the ones that called in the Bigfoot that I put down, and they're responsible. But he never said that. And I think this is the type of guy that would have said that. So, you know, he went on to say, hey, it was my buddies that could have done it. It was possibly that, you know, the BFR, he went through everybody that he had told or had been part of this situation. So I don't really think he knows, and I don't think he really knows who did it. But the thing is about the interview that really kind of stuck to me was, and I hate to go backwards on mine and Wes's encounter too as well, but it was the same type of thing. Hey, you know, it was a day later, the military showed up, there was helicopters, there was, it seemed to be like federal agents or some sort of people there. And we were actually followed off and ran out off the property. So I know so everything that he had said is some of the things that Wes and I also have been through. And so it really stuck to me. I was like, okay, well, this guy, he's pretty much telling me the same story that kind of happened to myself at some point. It was very close. And I really bought into his story, and I think it was probably one of the best interviews I've ever heard. And I don't think he was lying at all. And Tony, some of the things he had said, when you come back and you reiterated the same question, only turned around and twisted a little bit, he had almost a better answer the second time around than he did the first time around. So it was great. Brian's a great guy. He's the type of guy that I hope you got his contact info. I know you did. And if he ever needs somebody to come out and be an so-called investigator or researcher, hey, I'm down. Wes and I are both down, and I know you will be as well. So I think it would be a great trip for all of us if he's okay with that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, side note, if you guys are willing to travel to Ohio, I'm more than fine driving to Ohio. I'd be fine with that. But you bring up a good point about the whole researchers and everything, because, you know, before that, he said he didn't know who took the body. And he legitimately said, I don't know who took the body. It was just gone. And so, and when you related to the idea earlier in the show, right in the beginning, he talked, I forget how he stated it to start the conversation off, but he started talking about that's what it was. He said he wanted to keep the property private as far as address goes because of all the idiots out there, referring to the so-called researchers. And so this is a guy that who has reached out to, you know, certain amount of people. I know that for a fact because in private conversation, he mentioned some people that he reached out to. They didn't take him serious. They didn't give him time. And the more he tried reaching out to them, they eventually would block him. And so I don't understand why that happened. You know, there's two sides to every story and all that stuff, so I'm not going to make assumptions on anything. But you're right. This is the kind of guy that if he thinks something, he's going to say it, because that's just how he handled the entire interview.
Yeah, I guess I can say this because I'm a listener and not the host. And Tony, I don't want you to answer this question, but I want to ask Woody.
No.
Just kidding. Did you get the feeling like he maybe fabricated the part where it was coming after him? This guy has such a hatred for him, and I'm not saying he's a liar. That's not what I'm trying. I'm saying that portion almost makes me wonder if he almost came up with that as a story to the game warden, to people. And I don't blame him for doing that, but did you get that impression, or did you get a feeling like he was straightforward and he honestly felt, I don't think this guy fears anything or anyone.
I don't either.
And that's the whole reason why I'm asking the question, because this guy and, you know, King Kong walk into a alley. There's only one coming out, and it ain't the monkey. I really think this guy has no qualms about, you know, as I listen to the story. But what do you think about that?
So here's my take on it. I think the guy would pretty much bust or blow anybody's head off that crosses. You know, I don't know if that should be a funny note or not, but I laughed. So here's the deal. So here's the deal with Brian, and this is the take that I got out of it, was when he was explaining, he's a true hunter. Well, we all agree on that. I mean, the guy, he hands down is probably a master hunter. He's spent a lot of time out in the bush or the woods, whatever you want to call it, in the timber. And I really think he has. So he's describing one of the first times he had seen Bigfoot, and he's all camoed out. He's sitting in the chair, or not in the chair. He's up against a tree and it's all camo stuff. And so this guy has been around. He's been around a little bit. He knows to hunt. He's saying, hey, you got to use scent blocker. You got to do this. You got to do that. These are the steps that you got to do in order to get, what do you call it? The big gobble, the gobble,
the gobbler, the big gobbler,
the big gobbler,
the gobbler.
Right. Yeah. And so, he definitely knows what he's talking about. Well, here's the part where it kind of got a little bit sideways for me, to where I felt like he might be, okay. So you all know what CYA is. Cover your CYA. So I think that's pretty much what he was doing. I think he might have been startled by the creature. Maybe it did get too close. I'm not sure. He made it sound like it was having an aggressive stance. Is that what you're talking about?
I was wondering about. But he did shoot. I honestly believe this guy. And if he hit it at 15 yards, that's pretty damn close.
It's too close for me.
Yeah. And so maybe he's right. Maybe it did, start to do a mock charge toward them. I don't know why I brought that up. I was just thinking at the time, I almost wonder if he would change that part of it because the game wardens and the, everyone's coming up. And so you can kill a spotted owl if it's attacking you,
right? Or a bald eagle. If you're being attacked by a bald eagle, and if you have a decent story and you can justify it and show exactly what happened, and he even brought up the bald eagle thing. So, I don't know. I mean,
it's not really a major point.
It's not going to make or break the story for me, really.
No.
It's kind of one of those things where you might say something to stay out of prison. I don't know, but. That could have been a little bit fabricated because I tell you, okay. And this is why. Let me finish hold on, because I know you're going to say something. So let me finish. So if I see a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch, and I would never let it get 15 or 20 yards from me before I blow its damn head off, as far as he puts it, right? So it's going to happen before that point.
Right.
And he said it actually came up, squared up, had an aggressive stance. Very well could be. Very well could be.
I guess maybe I take back my comment because he did hit it at 15 yards, and that's pretty damn close.
That's a hell of a lot closer than I would have it.
Yeah. And so maybe it did charge him, but I didn't mean to cut you off, Tony. Woody and I are just taking over.
No.
Hey, welcome to the show,
absolutely.
Tony.
Thanks for being here tonight. Thanks, Tony. How are you doing tonight?
we're combining three shows tonight. Renegades, Confessionals, and Sasquatch Chronicles. All equal hosts,
right?
No, but I understand what you guys are saying, and if I'm hearing you right, it almost sounds like possibly if you want to go down this narrated path of what could have happened, maybe he doesn't like these things. Clearly, he doesn't like these things. So whatever that reason is, he hates these things. Not even dislikes; he hates these things.
He even said that.
And you're right. And so maybe I'm just playing along with your story. I'm going to back up what I think after this. You can say that, if he hates these things, he sees it going through the woods and he blows it away and he's almost like proud of it. He's like, I'm glad I did that. I've been wanting to, take it out. And then, when the agents show up, he, starts changing his story because they're like, dude, you're going to jail. And he's like, whoa, I was defending myself. And as a hunter, you would understand maybe that there's certain things you can say to kind of get out of killing something you shouldn't have killed.
Yeah.
However, I would say that to back up his story and to kind of do the opposite here, there's two things, actually. One, before he told us his third encounter, which is when he killed it, the second encounter was he had a gun in his hands. He lit one up with his flashlight at night, and he didn't shoot it. He didn't kill it. He didn't fire at it.
That's true. And so I got a counter to that when you're done, but go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, Tony.
So in my mind, I'm like, he has a gun on it, and he doesn't shoot it. He lets it go. And on top of it, I would say that if he is what he described he is in the situation, and from what I don't know because, like I said, I don't hunt, but to me, it sounded like he was sitting down low, almost like against a tree, covered up in leaves, disguised. Mm-hmm. He even talked about the scent. Like he disguised his scent. Like he sounds like the kind of guy that goes all out when he's hunting. And he was hunting this gobbler for years. And so
this monster,
that part was
monster gobbler shaking the trees.
So he wants to get this thing bad, and he's out there for one specific gobbler, and so he's all decked out in camo, whatever that is, and he even said in the interview, I looked like I was a walking tree. And so when he sees this thing, he moves, and when he moves, this thing sees him. And so at that point, maybe because he said, I told it to get out of here, and it came towards him. Now I'm just saying, if he's totally decked out in camo, and he is as disguised as he says he is, and his scent isn't even of a human, does this thing come over to it almost out of curiosity? And then the closer it gets, the more aggressive it gets, because maybe it's not sure what it's looking at, or it does know what it's looking at, and it feels threatened.
Right. Yeah, I can go with that.
Yeah.
And he seems like the type of guy, too, that would just say, hey, I blew its head off, and... you know, I don't know why I asked that question earlier. I'd like to strike that question from the record, Your Honor.
It's already been typed up.
Tony, I think I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think you have a really good point, and I didn't even think of that point, actually. And it very well could be that Bigfoot is thinking this is it could be a possible another predator or something equal or less or more. You know, that could be a problem, and then I might have to, you know, I have to take a stance with and be defensive with. I didn't really think of that part, but the part that stood out with me was when you even you said he said he saw one. Was it a black one in the field? And that could be. I just saw that. Was it a black one in the field? He didn't blast.
When you know he what? Went I can't remember. I don't know if he said.
So I think he saw one, decided not to take a shot. Well, here's my deal. When you asked him later in the show, you said, Brian, would you be willing to have people come out and investigate this and do something? And his first response was, as long as I have my deer tags filled. so if it's hunting season, if it's deer season, and he's trying to fill those tags, well, he's going to blow the damn head off, right? So I think at that point, if it wasn't deer season, if it wasn't something like that, maybe he won't take the shot. You know, and it could have been, it's kind of funny that he took the shot based on, he was actually turkey hunting at the time, so that doesn't fit. But, you know, he was upset about running all the deer off. He had made several comments throughout the show about, and the dog food disappearing. The deer on the trail cams would disappear when it was during hunting season. And, based on that, it might be one of those things where it's like, hey, man, you're taking my food away. I'm going to take you out type of thing. I guess this is where I'm going with it. So, and his story could, and I don't know, his story could have been like, it took an aggressive stance. It took a charge at me. Was it during deer season? Was it during turkey season? It was actually during turkey season. But if something is taking your food, humans have the ability to, be like, hey, you're done. You're taking my food away. I'm going to take you out. So. I don't know. With that being said, I think you kind of get the gist of where I'm going with that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a lot of blah, 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 blah.
I saw these comments sometimes online this week with people sharing, just little snide comments. And, I don't say anything. I just let people say what they want to say. But the whole idea of a 12-gauge taking one of these things down, in my mind, I didn't really... Like I said, I don't really know exactly the power or whatever. But what kind of got me was the idea that he knew a single shot 12 gauge wasn't what he needed. Later in the show, he mentioned that he had a single shot when he heard the howls go off or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And he was like, I'm out of there because I can't take these things on with just with the kind of ammo I was packing. And so the idea of what he had in hand, and he referenced the idea that whatever he was hunting with for the turkey may not have been totally legal, because after the feds came out, he's like, now I do everything by the books. And he's like, yeah. It sucks.
Well, he was running with 5 shells in his gun. He had made that comment earlier in the day, or earlier in the interview. So he had 5 shells in his gun. You're only legally able to hunt with 3 shells in a 12-gauge shotgun. So he was already he's breaking the rules by doing that. But you know what? There's a lot of hunters out there that do that.
That's not something. Take the choke out.
They take the choke out and they run it for five or whatever. However, whatever your barrel have. Sometimes there are more than five.
Yeah.
But legally, you're only able to hunt with three. So when he was talking later in the show about being out there, he was saying, in fact, they were up in the. I think what he was saying is they were up in the hills and he heard the roar of one and he heard the roar of two. And then the next thing you know, there might have been a third one. I get where he was going with it. And with a single, when you have a single shot 12 gauge shotgun, you can only load one shell, you know, put it back together and blow it off, do it all over again. And so if you have multiple things happening, it's not a very comfortable situation. So that's why he backed out of there. Why he was out there when he has a semi out, which I don't get either. Why he was out there with the semi with a single shot 12 gauge shotgun when he made the comment earlier when he was out there with the semi auto 12 gauge shotgun with no choke in it with five rounds, I don't know. I don't know. That's neither here nor there. But if I had the choice, making a shotgun that holds one shell or five shells, I'm taking one that holds five shells. So, anyways,
yeah, I thought. I guess to answer your question, Tony, not that a watermelon is really comparable. But a watermelon at 15 yards and what he, you know, the 12 gauge, there's not going to be anything left of that watermelon.
Jungle juice.
I mean, be nothing left. And I realize that's not completely a great comparison between someone's head and, but to give you an idea, there wouldn't be much left of the, like Woody says, you probably have juice and that's about it. Here, I'll play a little clip of the audio that he recorded. What did he use to record that with?
Yeah, I think it was his phone because he sent it to me over Facebook and it came in video format. So I had to download the video, transfer it to audio. So I'm assuming it was with his phone.
That's a pretty good recording.
Yeah, it sounded close. It sounded close. The second one, the long howl, to me, that sounded real close because he actually, if you listen to the audio, it cuts in before or after the howl already started and it carries for about 15 seconds after that till it ends. And then you hear him cut the phone out. Now, when he's out there, recording this audio, he said that he was rolling. He wasn't going to turn around because he didn't have a gun on him at that time. And so I think there's context to be taken here when it comes to the idea that, of when he has a gun out there and what he's carrying, because all things point to the idea that he hates these things and he doesn't want anything to do with them. He's not researching them. Well, I think maybe he's starting to a little bit because he does talk about how he now wants to get proof so that people stop thinking he's crazy. And that's why he took the audio and he referenced it took like a year to get that audio. And now he wants to get video of it. To answer your question, that was a long way. I think it was with his phone.
you sound like me now.
You sound like Woody tonight.
We're drinking some water.
Yeah.
No,
start talking, and I'm like, well, what was the question? I don't remember what the question was. It's like a politician, you know, like when you ask Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or any of the – you ask a politician a question, and you're like
– stop it.
You forgot what you – I'm just giving you crap. Oh, no. Yeah, no, it's – Yeah, it's probably one, and I don't think this will be his last time shooting one.
So here's the thing. So here's the thing. Going back to the recording, okay. So this is what I got out of the recording. First of all, it was probably one of the better recordings I've ever heard because you not only hear one, you hear multiple, which is really cool. And number two, in the background, you can actually he's already telling you what this is. What it is. This is Bigfoot. This is what I hear every night. these are the red furry things that screw up my honey and screw up everything. This is what I hear every night, and you can hear it in his voice. He's definitely pissed off at these things for pissing him off, right? So the thing I got about it out of the recording, and here I'm being long-winded again, but if you listen to it, you can hear the crickets. You can hear the natural sounds of being outdoors on a quiet property. You hear all those natural sounds. And if you listen to it really close, you hear the crickets in the background. You hear maybe a little bit of wind and stuff like that. So to me, that really emphasized on how true the recording probably is. And it's one of the better ones I've heard.
That lung capacity that thing was packing was some amazing. Serious lung capacity, too. Yeah, I mean, to carry that power behind it for so long. I don't know. That's some serious size. And I asked him, because the first clip I played was the three different howls going off at one time. He sent that to me maybe a week or a week and a half, 2 weeks before we did the interview. And I told him, I said, well, from whatever I heard before, as far as, you know, Bigfoot howls, especially the Ohio howl, you know, it sounds very similar. And I said, however, there's going to be a lot of people that if they hear that, they're going to say they're going to want to write it off as cows. And I just told him that because, you know, that's just fact. People are going to, you know, people who just want to dismiss everything and don't really want to admit something is true. They want to find the first reasonable explanation, and cows would be that. And so I talked to him about that, and he told me, he said, there's no cows around here. He's like, there's no cows around here. And so that said, I think that kind of eliminates the idea that it could be cows on his property.
Yeah, that didn't sound like cows to me.
Didn't me either. It was too long. I've never heard a cow hold something like that out that long and that loud, right? with that much diaphragm. Yeah, I really haven't.
Yeah, and when you listen to those two recordings, you can hear the similarities between the two. Like, I mean, obviously the first one has three, the second one has one, but the sounds that you're hearing are very similar. And when you listen to those compared to the Ohio howl, I mean, it sounds like the same creature to me. What do you guys think?
I don't know, man. I think you ought to be damn careful out there, especially after picking one off. As far as the sounds go, yeah, it does sound a lot like the Ohio howl sound, the audio that was captured. Actually, here's a clip. Here's the Ohio howl. Okay, now we're back.
Back.
And we're back.
And take three.
Check. Take 10.
Yeah, take 10.
Yeah, but everyone's heard the Ohio howl, but there is a lot of similarities between the two. I just hope he's careful. I've never had too many situations with people shooting them, but the ones that have said they did kill one, that makes sense. It's going to sound like you two. Anyway,
what do you think?
It never turns out well.
Do you really buy that he shot one? What
yeah,
do you think?
I do.
I do too.
I do.
What do you think,
yeah,
Tony?
So do I.
I'm not taking absolutely. Over here, but what do you think?
Yeah. No, it's fine. I mean, this is a mutual conversation. No, I absolutely do believe him. And I'm my own worst critic. So when I tell you I know I'm gullible, I really do know I'm gullible. And so that's why it's important to me to get second and third opinions. And that's why I let you guys listen to the show before I even aired it. But, no, I definitely do believe him. And like how we're discussing just the details that went into it and the, you know, it's like the interview was like an organized chaos in a sense where
absolutely.
It was like sporadic. Like we were going back and forth. And,
yeah.
And you could hear his thought processes going from one topic to another. And then when we rewind, he would pick up where he left off and finish his details or remember details and correct himself. And to me, now, like I said, I'm just a stupid truck driver. I turn a wheel and push pedals for a living. That's what I do, you know?
Well, you're probably the smartest guy in the room currently.
When I hear him do that kind of thing, for me, it lended authenticity. And this is information that if you kind of put it all together, at least on my end, it helps too. So earlier this year, I received some audio from a researcher who has a Bigfoot group in South Ohio. I'm blanking on the name of the group. It's called a Southeastern Ohio Bigfoot Society, or I forget, something like that. Yeah. But it's run by a guy named Doug Waller. And I met Doug Waller at a speaking engagement that I did earlier this year. And we were talking, and he said, and actually he played an audio during his lecture. And that lecture, he's playing this audio, and it sounded like the Ohio Howl. And I was really impressed by it because it was just so clear. And so I got to talking to him about it, and he sent me the audio because he wanted it transferred into video format so he could post it online and things like that. Well, long story short, I get permission to post the audio on my YouTube channel. And so I share it with a lot of people, and people really enjoyed the audio because it's very clear. And it sounded like what Brian sent me. It sounded like an Ohio Howl, and this audio was recorded in Salt Fork State Park in Ohio. And so you have this guy, who his name is Mike, by the way, that sent Doug this audio earlier this year in April. You got Brian sending me audio that sounds very similar from South Ohio in the same year. And then I have another guy that sent me audio, and he sent me two more emails today that I haven't even had a chance to open up. He sent me more audio today of these howls that he's getting in Southern Ohio. And so in 1 year, I've had three different people come to me with their own audio of these howls in Ohio. And so when I have Brian coming to me and saying, here, I have these howls too, and I put one down a few years ago, for me, it's like, okay, this guy's really seeing these things. He's really hearing these things. So why would I not believe that he put one down when he's telling this story? And it's very convincing.
I don't know why you're yelling. I mean, we're trying to, you don't have to be an asshole. We're just having a conversation here.
I get passionate sometimes. I'm sorry.
No, I, what was the question?
Do I believe him?
Oh yeah. No, I absolutely. Absolutely. See how easy that was?
Yeah. Man of short words. No, Antonio, I get what you're saying. You have other people backing up, the same type of things that Brian's having. They're having reports of the howling. You've heard, and you're saying that you probably possibly have other stuff in your email based on, you know, what Brian sent you that could match somewhat of the same sound type of description. I get it, man. I get it. And I'm not calling it. I think Brian is spot on a lot of things. And even like, you know, when he even talked about, and I know I'm kind of backpedaling, might be repeating a little bit, but when he talked about, you know, the people that showed up, or the gentlemen that showed up in the black SUVs with the badge around the neck and on a necklace and stuff like that, you know, everything that he had said makes sense. And then when he even went, you know, and you talked to him a little bit later about that, and he brought it up again, he says, oh, okay, well, this is actually what they said, almost verbatim. He doesn't have time. I don't care how smart you are. This guy had a story. He might not have had the whole story based on the first question, but the second question come around, it matched. And you don't have time to make stuff like that up. So, great. It was a great encounter. The guy had a great encounter.
I thought it was interesting. He was talking about how they're apes. He never said people. He never said. He said gorilla, didn't he, Tony? When you asked him,
he did.
Yeah, he described it as some kind of American gorilla. You know.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting how he doesn't see them as people. And it's funny when you're talking to him about the woo. I was like, you got to know your audience. This guy isn't. This isn't the man you start asking woo questions to.
Right. He's like, what's the woo?
Yeah, but it was, you know, and he said he'd never experienced anything paranormal. Now that doesn't mean it doesn't go on. I'm just saying, in this guy's case, it didn't go on, and he shot it.
My mom was running there because the reason why I asked him that was because, at that point in the interview, I'm sold. I believe that he saw what he saw. And I wanted to ask him that because there's so many people out there that say that they see these things disappear. And I wanted to see if he saw anything that could resemble such an idea. And he actually did confirm that. He did say that these things move so fast and so in such a way that he could see how people would think that they would disappear. Now, I'm not saying that people who say they've seen them disappear or anything like that are lying or, you know, misidentifying what's really going on. They very well might have seen what they saw. But I'm just saying from his perspective, you know, he actually did confirm that, you know, he could see why people would think that.
Yeah, actually, part of his answer was when you asked him that, he said, he didn't really say the word environment, but based on the word their environment and where they're at, in the woods, he said they have the ability to move very fast. And I could see, but almost word for word, he said, I can see how people would say that they could disappear. Now, do I believe that they are, and you brought up I don't know if it was a spiritual thing or what you said, but he said, no, I don't think so. They're a flesh and blood creature, but they have the ability to move faster than anything we've ever seen. And it makes sense, you know, makes sense.
Yeah. You know, and another thing, I think I told you this, Wes. You know, this guy, he's not a storyteller. And people who, this is not anything against him, but, you know, after you interview a lot of people, you kind of get a rhythm. And you can tell people, they've been sitting on a story for a long time. They've been wanting to tell their story. And when they have the opportunity, they really do tell their story. They want to get the details out. They really want to share what they experienced and describe it in a way that other people really truly walk away understanding where they came from. And he is just not like that. He's just like I said earlier, he's very matter of fact about things. And that's why I think he got into the nitty gritty details so early in the show. I mean, ideally, as the interviewer, you'd like a little bit of a buildup, you know, leading to the point where I blew its head off. But I mean, I think, all the details came out after he kind of exposed that.
It was awesome.
We're like 5 minutes in the interview and he's like, I killed it. Yeah. You know, and that was my third encounter, you know. Yeah, so
that was my third encounter. I was busting up at that part where he goes, I blew its face off.
No, I blew its damn face off.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. And then there's like a 10-second pause and he goes, and that was my third encounter.
Yeah.
I was just like, I lost it right there, man. I mean, I realize it's a serious show and stuff, but
right.
You're right. He's not, I believe him. I truly do believe him. And I just hope that he's careful out there on that property. These things tend to be vengeful and have revenge in their heart. I've talked to too many people that have had them on their property, and something like this happens, and things get really, really bad. He thought they were bad before. Well, now it gets 100 times worse. I would have loved to have seen. I wish he would have taken pictures of the body. I know some of the questions on the Sasquatch Chronicles website, they were saying, well, why no pictures?
This guy's a country boy, man.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. That's exactly.
He can explain everything about hunting.
I don't see him breaking out a camera and, you know, he was very.
He probably didn't have one on him.
Even if he did, I don't know that he would.
He probably didn't have a cell phone on him, to be honest with you. I mean, if you're out there and he's talking about hunting the way that he did, he ain't got no damn cell phone, right? And here's the thing about Brian too is he didn't overtell the story. Brian just came out and said, "Hey, this thing pissed me off. It was in front of me. I blowed his damn head off." And then he went in further with the interview and talking about, "Hey, there's more out there. I've had more encounters." But the guy's for real, man, right?
Yeah, and Wes, you mentioned about how these things can, you know, want to retaliate. And, you know, he shot this thing back in 2013, so that's 4 years ago, right? Yeah, 4 years ago. And, you know, I wonder if that kind of led to his attitude during the show, because in 4 years, no doubt he's had these encounters with them, he's heard them, and, you know, like that one, the second recording, I mean, for me, it sounded pretty darn close to where he was. And so I wonder if these things have been showing, vamping up their aggression towards him. And maybe that's why he just comes across so much more hateful 4 years later towards this thing. Like, it's the way he was talking, it sounded like he killed this thing yesterday. Like, he was just so mad at him. Yeah. And I wonder if, you know, maybe that it's just wearing him down.
It could be. Could be. It's hard to say.
I think it's based on hunting. He had made the comment in the interview about how he goes out there and plants beans and he plants turnips and he plants all this stuff and he doesn't even tend to the garden. It's for the deer, you know, so he can hunt.
And I think what it is he thinks are messing up his population of deer, and that's why he's so pissed off. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I wanted to ask you both this, and I don't really know how to ask this question other than just present the idea out there. A lot of people say that these things, you can't kill them. A gun's not going to kill them. I've heard so many people on interviews say, yeah, you're not going to shoot this thing. It's not going to go down. So, you know, the vibe I'm sure people are getting right now is, well, you can't shoot these things and kill them. Now, when he says that he shot it in the face, how would that be any different for these people to maybe kind of grasp? Because I don't even know how to present this idea. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, I guess a lot of people feel like these things are almost invincible, like they can't be taken down by a gun. You need like an elephant gun or a bazooka to take it down. But by shooting in the face, is there any vulnerabilities that could present the situation for it to go down?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a headshot? Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times with the girth of them, I think, you know, you shoot something off to the... Well, I don't even know, man. That close? It seems like you'd blow a hole just about into anything. How does that answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to... I just wanted to bring that up because when I was thinking about it all, you know, that was one of the questions that I knew was going to pop up in people's heads. Just the idea of killing a Bigfoot. A lot of people walk around saying these things, you can't take these things down with any kind of normal gun. But when you're 15 yards away and you shoot it in the face, I mean, there's vulnerabilities in my mind on the face that, you know, like I can understand if somebody wants to say, I shot it in its chest and it just didn't do much. But I mean, you got eyeballs in the face and you penetrate the eyeball, that goes right in the brain, you know?
Yeah, I think with these things, I think like what he said, the guy's a hunter. He knows what he's doing. He shot it in the face. And I think a lot of times when you hear about the girth, the size of Sasquatch, that's why it seems like they're invincible at times. Because I've talked to people who claim to have shot them. The problem is we don't have evidence of that. That's the biggest problem is it's mainly just stories. But every encounter, you know, like the one in Virginia where the two Sasquatches, there was one in a tree. And it huffed at him, and then he shot it. It fell, and there's blood. I mean, I've even had witnesses on the show that have claimed to have shot them. Definitely hurt them. There was blood. But I don't think that they're invincible.
Well, I'll tell you my thought on it real quick. So basically this guy, he's already convinced me that he's a master hunter. I mean, based on some of the stuff he said, based on where he lives, the property that he lives on, a lot of things he had said. So based on that, if people have seen a Bigfoot, by no means, if you have a gun, you're not going to... Okay, look. So he had talked about the Bigfoot being 9 feet tall, 5 feet wide, right? So something that size at 100 yards and you shoot it, you're probably not... unless you have a big bore rifle, even if you have a 30-06... you have a 7mm, or you have anything else. You know, you're going to hit it. You probably won't take it down. So that's where I think that's where the people get a little bit sideways because they feel like it's invincible. Well, this guy waited till it was 15 yards and decided. How do you say it? Pull the trigger, bust him, and pull the trigger. So he's smart. He waited till the animal of that size became into reach of the weapon that he had, and decided to bust it. So that almost kind of like verifies his story because you're not going to take a shot at a Sasquatch or a Bigfoot at 75 yards, not even really 50 yards with a shotgun like that, and expect to blow its face off. So he waited till it was in range. Until he felt, you know, he was uncomfortable until he felt comfortable to take the shot. And I think that's what happened is because this guy's been around a little bit.
That's some really good points. That's really good points, actually. The fact that he would wait until it's within range of what he had. Showing that he knew what he was doing.
It was an awesome interview. And the guy's awesome. He's probably one of the more entertaining guests I've heard. I definitely enjoyed listening to him. And you did a great job with it, Tony. You should be proud of it, man.
I appreciate that. I was hoping I didn't botch it, but when I got a chance to go back and listen to the interview, because I knew during the interview it was kind of jumping all over the place, and ideally that's not what I wanted. But when I got a chance to go back and listen to it, it actually flows well that way, because that's just how he is as a person. He kind of bounces around with what he's talking about, wherever his mind goes, and it worked out great, I think. And I hope everybody enjoys it as much as we did. So I really appreciate you guys coming on.
Yeah, and don't send Tony hate mail because of it. Save your breath.
It was definitely one of the better interviews I've heard, and real realistic. And I pretty much believe everything Brian had to say, except for the part of it charging him. I don't know about all that, but anyways.
Yeah, no, I thought it was awesome. I thought he was awesome, and yeah, great job. Cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
See you guys later.
A strange woman kissed me, a type This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like... Wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.